You've probably heard the saying, no one on their deathbed ever says, I wish I would have spent more time at the office. It's generally assumed that when we get toward the end of life, we'll want to focus on our loved ones. And the last thing we'll be thinking about is work. But this is a story about a man recently diagnosed with terminal cancer. Now, all he wants to do is talk about his work. He's a former astronaut who says the job he has to do now as a climate scientist is just too important to leave undone. As part of WBEZ Chicago's Heat of the Moment, which explores stories about everyday life on a changing planet, Alex Kodlowitz reports.
Let me be upfront. I first met Pierre Sellers because he's dying. I spent some time with Sellers this spring. He looked thinner than his photos from his days as an astronaut. At 61, he's a swoon-worthy, handsome man, but his white dress shirt draped loosely on his shoulders, as if it was a size too big. He told me he'd lost 30 pounds in 3 weeks, a result of the drugs he's taking. Honestly, I don't think that Sellers would like me mentioning this all here, at the beginning of his story. He doesn't like talking about his health.
Yeah, I'm still alive, man, and I'm always optimistic.
I'll return to this, his optimism, in a bit. But let me begin by telling you his story. That way I think you'll understand why I'm here with Sellers in the first place. As a young boy growing up in England, Sellers yearned to go into space, and so in 1991, at the age of 36, he became a U.S. citizen. At the time, he was a climate scientist working at NASA's Earth Science Center, a place called Goddard. 5 years later, he left his job as a climate scientist when he got selected to become an astronaut.
Atlantis, roger.
His first flight was aboard the space shuttle Atlantis.
The throttle up call from Capcom Ken Ham, joined on the flight deck by mission specialist Pierce Sellers, seated down on the mid-deck.
I didn't have a religious epiphany or anything like that at all. It did change my perceptions a bit.
Like you're probably picking up, Sellers is no nonsense, a scientist who's grounded in what he knows to be true. But he also told me that on that first flight, right after the launch, he looked out the window. What he saw left him in awe. The equivalent, I suppose, of a scientific epiphany.
You get up there, and the Earth is this huge ball, and there's like this tiny film of gas around it. You can, you know, when you look at the horizon, it's just a thin, thin blue ribbon, you know, which is the atmosphere. I mean, you know, there's almost nothing there.
It's so thin, like an onion skin, he thought.
But wow, is that all we have? Gosh. But that really brought home to me that this whole business of humans, through fairly modest actions, being able to have a huge impact on the atmosphere, because there isn't much of it.
This flight in 2002 was a time when top government officials denied the existence of global warming. And so what Sellers saw had a big impact on him, driving home what he already knew from years immersed in the data, that the Earth was more vulnerable than most thought. In the end, he flew a total of 3 missions and took 6 spacewalks before he wrapped up his time as an astronaut. Done with space in 2011, he had to decide what to do next. He made what to some seemed like an unusual choice.
And we were surprised he came back.
This is Paul Newman, not the Paul Newman. This is one of Sellers' co-workers at Goddard.
You know, he could have had a pick of a lot of the jobs in NASA. But he chose to come here.
Here is NASA's Earth Sciences Division at the Goddard Space Flight Center just outside of Washington, D.C. When Sellers quit being an astronaut, as Newman said, he really could have gone just about anywhere. But he chose to become a bureaucrat, but an important one, a leader of the government's efforts to study climate change. As director of Earth Sciences at Goddard, he oversees 1,500 scientists and engineers who, using data from satellites and from ground research stations, work to more precisely measure where the carbon comes from and where it's going, and to predict what lies ahead. Their climate models have become so important that public officials regularly visit for briefings. Sellers' new job is one that's gotten him into some public scrapes. 2 years ago, Steve Stockman, a congressman from Texas, visited, and Sellers tried to do what he always does, which is lay out the science and break things down in layman's terms. But not long after, at a congressional hearing, Representative Stockman took a shot at Sellers, really kind of mocking him.
I mean, some of the things that they're talking about, mathematically and scientifically, don't make sense. He said that what ended the ice age was global wobbling. That's what I was told. This is a lead scientist down in Maryland. You're welcome to go down there and ask him the same thing.
Sellers felt insulted.
I felt that what we said was being distorted. I don't think we have to stand for that. I'm a civil servant, right? That doesn't mean to say that I'm deaf and dumb.
So Sellers fired back in an equally public way. In a New York Times op-ed, he scolded the congressman for what he said was trivializing the accepted theories. Congress funds Goddard, and so Sellers took some heat inside NASA for skirmishing with the congressman. But he takes such pride in that moment that the piece, 2 years later, is still tacked to his bulletin board.
Now, Wobbling on Climate Change was the first op-ed I did in 2014. That's the Times, yeah. So you can borrow it if you want.
I recently visited Sellers at his office, building number 33 on Goddard's 1,200-acre complex. Despite his weight loss, he still looks remarkably fit. He has an open face and a mischievous smile. I was at Goddard to see him because he had publicly disclosed this past January in a second New York Times op-ed that he had been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. After months of fatigue and various aches, he'd gone to a doctor and was told that barring some small miracle, he had a year and a half or 500 days to live.
You know, I told my close friends and family fairly quickly after diagnosis and then sent out a circular to everybody, which says, hey, I've been diagnosed with cancer, and all this stuff. And I said, reasons to be cheerful. This has greatly simplified my retirement planning, gets me out of jury duty, and there is a promise of improved parking access in D.C., which is like gold. So, you know.
This is Sellers, jocular and playful. But around the time of his diagnosis, he made a weighty decision. This is what he wrote about in the New York Times, and it's what I wanted to talk to him about. He wrote about how he wanted to spend the rest of his life. He said he wanted to spend time with his two grown children, but that he had no interest in hanging out on a beach or climbing some mountain. He wrote,
"As for me, I have no complaints. I'm very grateful for the experiences I've had on this planet. As an astronaut, I spacewalk 220 miles above the Earth. Floating alongside..."
He wrote about the need for policymakers to catch up with the science, and he concluded this way.
"From this God's eye view, I saw how fragile and infinitely precious the Earth is. I'm hopeful for its future. And so, I'm going to work tomorrow."
It feels so plain, but he's saying, "I have very few days left in the world, and I know how I want to use them. Continue to lead and shape NASA's climate work, and speak to as many people as I can about what I know and about what I've seen." It's like he's launched into a sprint.
"I don't have time to stalk this horse slowly over many years. I thought I better, get what's been on my mind for a while out there quickly and as clearly as I can."
He's adamant that little has changed in the way he conducts himself, but it's clear that because of his failing health, more people are listening.
Peter Sellers, welcome to GPS.
Great to be here, Fareed.
This is him on CNN speaking with Fareed Zakaria.
I mean, I think every one of us wonders, what would I do in a situation like that? All these emotions swirling in your head.
Actually, the emotion swirling in the head part took about 10 minutes, to be honest.
I learned quickly that while he's happy to get the attention, to get his message and ideas out, he has no patience with people who want to dwell on the personal drama of his health. Trust me, I tried going there.
So here's something asking me. So you talk about optimism, but it's got to, in some ways, be hard given your own situation.
No. Am I optimistic that the human race can fight its way out of this particular situation? I am. I mean, we've done it before so many times. When we're in a fix, we found some way out of it.
It's simple for him. He's been to space, he knows what humans are capable of, and is convinced that with the same kind of single-mindedness and inventiveness, we can find a way to slow down the warming of the globe. I've got to admit, sometimes his optimism feels more like wishful thinking. In his op-ed, he declared last year was the death of denial. I pointed out to him that one presidential candidate has called climate change a hoax, and the conservative Breitbart news site responded to his op-ed with an article sarcastically headlined, "NASA Chief, Global Warming is Real Because I Have Cancer."
You push the sled along.
Yep.
Does he work with a polar bear?
This past spring, in between chemotherapy treatments, Sellers chose to visit Greenland, just the kind of thing you'd find on a climate scientist's bucket list.
Greenland and the ice sheets of Greenland are really the canary in the coal mine for global climate change.
He'd never been there before, and he wanted to see it firsthand. The only place with more ice is Antarctica, and Greenland is warming more than twice as fast as the rest of the world.
You guys look like you're ready for the tropics.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to hitch a ride with the Royal Danish Air Force on a C-130 across Greenland, and after we got going, I was invited up into the cockpit. Terrific view.
When he talks about this flight, it's like that first time in space, when he saw the thinness of the atmosphere. Something he knew intellectually became visceral.
And as the clouds cleared, we came out of a clear patch, and I could see this huge ice massif, and then these immense rivers of ice, these glaciers slowly flowing out from them. I understood the numbers, I've seen the satellite data, I've seen the graphs, but when you actually see the glaciers themselves and how massive they are and the volume of discharge, clearly Greenland is losing ice at a massive rate. It really grounds you in reality as to what's going on.
There's an irony, I suppose, in Sellers' situation. He announces he's dying, but he doesn't want to talk about himself. He's used his illness to get people's attention, so that he can talk about what he's seen from space or from flying over Greenland, so that he can underscore the urgency around global warming. It's that important to him. I came away thinking it's kind of remarkable to see someone who can't forestall his own mortality working so hard to forestall the mortality of the planet. When Sellers returned from Greenland, he missed a day of work for a medical procedure, and we had to move our interview back a day. When we spoke, I asked how his health was. Bumpy, he replied, and then he moved on. It's tough, too, on those around him. When I walked the halls of Goddard, colleagues, when they heard I was working on a story about Sellers, would choke up. One of them described him as larger than life, another as transformational. They seemed galvanized by his resolve. But honestly, most of them seem just happy that they have him around for a while. This is Alex Kotlowitz, WBEZ.